ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So reading from the Jiva Dharma by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So just have to readjust to not having to wait for somebody to translate. So this first chapter, this is a novel by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And so in this novel, then he writes in all the different important philosophical points that are there in the Vaishnava philosophy, and then he brings them in, you know, one after the other. So it's very logically presented, very technically presented, but done very nicely in a story form. So it's very easy to assimilate. So this first chapter is called Jivar Nitya O Naimittik Dharma, or the Soul's Eternal and Temporary Natures. Of all earthly realms, Jambudvip is the best. Of all places in Jambudvip, Bharatvarsha is the best. Of all places in Bharatvarsha, Gaudadesh is the best. Of all places in Gaudadesh, Sri Navadvip Mandala is the best. In one part of Sri Navadvip Mandala, on the Ganga shore, the beautiful village of Sri Godruma. Is splendidly manifest eternally. In ancient times, many Bhajananandi devotees made their homes in the gardens of Sri Godruma. In that place, in a cottage of vines, a Sarabi cow once worshipped Lord Gaurasundara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not far from that place was a bhajan kutir named Pajumna Kunj. In that bhajan kutir, thick with vines, a Paramahamsa Babaji, who was an initiated disciple of the Supreme Lord's personal associate Pajumna Brahmachari, always stayed, wrapped in the bliss of worshipping the Lord, Bhajanananda. Aware that Sri Godruma is not different from Sri Nandagram in Vrindavan, Sri Premjas Babaji, who was learned in all the scriptures, also took shelter in that holy place. Every day he chanted Lord Hari's names 200,000 times. Every day he offered hundreds and hundreds of dandavat obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. He maintained his life by madhukari begging at the homes of the cowherd people there. He strictly followed the rules of a saintly life. When he had finished all his spiritual duties, he would not waste his time with gossip. Rather, he would read with tears in his eyes. In Prema Varta of Lord Gaurasundara's dear associate, Jagadananda Pandit, at those times, the devotees in that forest grove would listen with love and devotion. And why not? The book, Prema Vaivarta, is full of the sweet mellows, rasas of devotional service. Also, this Babaji read it so sweetly that hearing its words at once extinguished whatever remained of the poison fire of material desires in the hearts of the devotees. One afternoon, when he had finished the chanting of all his rounds, the Paramahamsa Babaji sat down in the Madhavi vine-covered cottage and read from Prema Vivarta. And as he read, he became plunged in the ocean of devotional love. At that moment, an austere sannyasi approached him and again offered dandavat obeisances at his feet. Plunged in devotional bliss, the Babaji was, for a long moment, unaware of external events. Finally seeing the sannyasi prostrate before him, the Babaji, who was more humble than a blade of grass, at once bowed down to greet him, saying, O Lord Chaitanya, O Lord Nityananda, please be merciful upon me, a fallen soul. The Babaji began to weep. Then the sannyasi said to the saintly Babaji, O Master, I am very lowly and fallen. Why, imitating my actions, do you mock me in this way? Then, taking the dust of the Babaji's feet, the sannyasi sat down before him. Giving the sannyasi a tree bark sitting place, and then sitting beside him, the Babaji, his words choked with spiritual love, said, O Master, I am a fallen soul. How may I serve you? Setting down his kamandalu, the regal sannyasi respectfully folded his hands and said, O Master, I am very unfortunate. I study the Shankhya, Patanjali, the Patanjala, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Purva Mimamsa, and Uttara Mimamsa philosophies. I studied the Vedanta Upanishads and many other scriptures also. I traveled on pilgrimage to Varanasi and many other holy places. I spent much time debating with others the meaning of the scriptures. It is 12 years now since I accepted a sannyasi danda from Srila Satchidananda Saraswatipad. After I accepted the danda, I spent my time always traveling to all the holy places. Wherever I went in Bharatvarsha, I always associated with the sannyasi followers of Shankara. Passing through the stages of Kutichak, Bahudak, and Hamsa, after a few days, I attained the stage of Paramahamsa. Then I stayed always at Varanasi. Observing a vow of silence, I took shelter of the saying, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahma. Pragyanam Brahma, Brahma is consciousness. And Tattvamasi, you are that. Which Shankara declares are the Mahavakyas, most important statements of the scriptures. Then one day, a saintly Vaishnava, singing songs about Lord Hari's pastimes, came before me. Opening my eyes wide, I gazed at him. He was bathed by the tears flowing from his eyes, and the hairs of his body stood erect in ecstasy. In a choked voice, he chanted, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda. Again and again, he danced with faltering steps. Sometimes he fell to the ground. As I gazed at him and heard his song, my heart became filled with love, a love I have no power to describe. Even though I became filled with love, I followed the rules of Paramahamsa life, and I did not speak a word to him. I am pathetic. My rules of Paramahamsa life are pathetic, and my so-called good fortune is also pathetic. Why did I not speak to him? Since that day, my heart has been irresistibly drawn to the feet of Sri Chaitanya. I became very agitated. I spent many days searching for that Vaishnava, but I did not see him anywhere. When I saw that Vaishnava and heard the holy names from his mouth, I became filled with a pure and sacred bliss. Before that time, I did not know that such a bliss existed anywhere. I did not think it was possible for a human being to experience such bliss. After some days of thinking, I decided that it would be best for me to take shelter of the feet of a Vaishnava. Then I left Varanasi and went to Sridham Vrindavan. There I saw many Vaishnavas. Every one of them was calling out the names, O Sri Rupa, O Sri Sanatana, O Sri Jiva Goswami, and lamenting. They were all meditating on Sri Sri Radha Krishna's pastimes, and in voices choked with love, calling out the name of Navadvipa. From that moment, I have yearned to see Navadvipa. After a 168-mile journey from Sri Vrajadham, I arrived in Mayapur a few days ago. In Mayapur town, I heard of your glories, and so now I have come to take shelter of your feet. Please be merciful to me, accept me as your servant, and give my story an ending that is good. Weeping again and again, and humbly placing a blade of straw between his teeth, the saintly Paramahamsa said, O saintly sannyasi, I am very unfortunate. I fill my belly, I sleep, I speak useless gossip, and in this way I have wasted my life. Now I pass my days in the place where Sri Krishna Chaitanya enjoyed his pastimes. Still I have no power to taste what is true love for Lord Krishna. You are fortunate, gazing at a Vaishnava for a moment, you tasted that love. You have received the mercy of Lord Krishna Chaitanya. If when you taste pure spiritual love, you once remember this fallen person, my life will be a great success. Speaking again and again in this way, the saintly Babaji tightly embraced the saintly sannyasi and bathed him with the tears flowing from his eyes. Touched by a Vaishnava, the saintly sannyasi felt an emotion he had never known before. He danced and wept. As he danced, he sang this verse. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Shri Prabhu Nityananda, Jaya Shri Prema Dasa, Guru Jaya Bhajanananda. Glory to Shri Krishna Chaitanya, glory to Lord Nityananda, glory to my spiritual master, Shri Prema Das, glory to the bliss of devotional service. After a long time of chanting and dancing, the two of them talked about many things. Saintly Prema Das, Babaji, humbly said, O great soul, please stay in this Prajumna Kunj for some days and purify me. The saintly sannyasi replied, I place my body in the service of your feet. What to speak of a few days, I will serve you to the end of my life. That is my wish. The saintly sannyasi was learned in all the scriptures. He well knew the spiritual benefit to be attained by staying in the spiritual master's home and studying under his guidance. Therefore, he very happily stayed for some days in that forest grove. After some days, the Paramahamsa Babaji said, O great soul, Sri Prajumna Brahmachari Thakur kindly keeps me at his feet. Today he is wrapped in the worship of Lord Nrisimha in the village of Devapali, in the outskirts of Navadvip Mandal. When we have finished our Madhukari begging for alms, let us go and see him. The saintly sannyasi replied, As you order, so I shall do. Crossing the Alakananda River, the two of them came to Devapali at 2 p.m. Then crossing the Suryatil River, they saw the Supreme Lord's personal associate, Sri Prajumna Brahmachari, in the temple of Lord Nrisimha. From a distance, the Paramahamsa Babaji offered dandavat obeisances to his spiritual master. Melting with love for the Lord's devotees, the saintly Brahmachari at once left the temple. With both hands lifted up, the Paramahamsa Babaji affectionately embraced him and inquired about his welfare. After a long talk about spiritual matters, the Paramahamsa Babaji introduced the saintly sannyasi. The saintly Brahmachari respectfully said, You have attained a proper spiritual master. You should learn Prema Vaivarta from Prema Das. It is said, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 8:128. Kiva Vipra, Kiva Nyasi, Shudra Kene Nai, Jai Krishna Tattva Veta, Sei Guru Hoi. Whether one is a Brahman, Sannyasi, or Shudra, regardless of what he is, he can become a spiritual master if he knows the science of Krishna. Then the saintly Sannyasi humbly offered dandavat obeisances to his Parama Guru, the spiritual master of his spiritual master, and said, O Master, you are a personal associate of Lord Chaitanya. Your glance of mercy can purify hundreds of arrogant sannyasis like me. Please be merciful to me. The saintly sannyasi was not experienced in the relationships amongst devotees. Still, he could see the relationship of the guru and paramaguru, and he did act in the way a sincere disciple should to his spiritual master. Then, after seeing the sandhya aroti, the two of them returned to Sri Godruma. After some days had passed in this way, the saintly sannyasi desired to learn the spiritual truth from the Paramahamsa Babaji. Except for his garments, the sannyasi had become like the Vaishnavas, controlling his mind and senses and filled with a host of virtues. He had full faith in the spiritual path. In addition to that, he was very humble, and he now had faith in the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Lord. One morning, at sunrise, the Paramahamsa Babaji sat in his cottage of Madhavi vines and chanted his rounds on Tulsi beads. As he remembered the Lord's pastimes of leaving Vrindavan, tears flowed again and again from his eyes. Now aware of his original spiritual form and forgetful of his external material body, he became engaged in a service appropriate for that time of mourning. Approaching, saintly sannyasi could see that the Babaji was plunged in an ecstatic trance. Staring at the sannyasi, the Paramahamsa Babaji said, O gopi friend, please silence that monkey, so he will not break the happy sleeping of our Radha Govinda. If they awaken, then our friend Lalita will be very unhappy, and she will rebuke me. Look. Ananga Manjari is signaling that it be done. You are Ramana Manjari. This is the service given to you. Please be careful and attentive. Speaking again and again in this way, the Paramahamsa Babaji finally became unconscious. Now understanding his identity in the spiritual world, the saintly sannyasi became engaged in those services. Then the sun rose and the beauty of dawn became manifested. The birds sang, gentle breezes blew. The morning sunlight made the cottage of Madhavi vines very beautiful, beautiful beyond description. The Paramahamsa Babaji was sitting on a seat made from banana bark. Gradually, he regained external consciousness. Then he continued to chant the holy names. At that time, the saintly sannyasi offered dandavat obeisances to the feet of the Babaji, humbly sat down beside him and said, O Master, this lowly person has a question. Please answer his question and make his burning life cool and happy. Burning life cool and happy again. Please sprinkle the nectar of Braja on his heart, a heart burned by the fire of impersonalism. The Babaji replied, You are qualified to hear answers. Please ask your question, and I will reply as I am able. The sannyasi said, O Master, for many days I have heard about religion. I have asked many people about the truth of religion. Sad to say, their answers were not in harmony with each other. Therefore, I ask, what is the true duty of the individual soul? Why do different teachers give different explanations of the true religion? There is only one truth. Why do the philosophers not agree in their opinions? So up to this point, we see that the place has been established of Gaudrum, its position, its transcendental, you know, specialty of being the most wonderful place in the whole universe. And that this place is Nandagaon. So then, after establishing the place, then the personalities in this pastime, then the Babaji, then Prajumna the Brahmachari, and the Sannyasi are then introduced. So you see, Prajumna the Brahmachari, he is the eternal associate of the Lord. He is the one who made the path the Lord Chaitanya went when he was going towards Vrindavan. He made all the nice trees and gardens and everything by his meditation. And he was he was called Nisringa Brahmachari because he was a devotee of Lord Nisringa. Then the Babaji, we see he's very qualified. And the Sannyasi also, it'll come up also a little bit later that he is from a Brahmin family. He is very, well-trained. He's learned all the different scriptures. He studied all the six philosophies, and he's been very well situated in this. He went on his pilgrimages. He did all his different duties. He came from the Hamsa to Paramahamsa stage. So we can see that they're all very qualified, and in this qualification, this is where everything is happening. This proper culture is very important. The philosophy has to be practiced. Then, generally in this world, then philosophy is taken as the highest. Action is less, philosophy is greater. Or some who are very practical, they'll say action is more important, what's the use of the philosophy? So you always get these two different opinions. One is for activities, one is for knowledge. But we see that there's a problem with both of these. Because the one, though it's very nice, the activities being done, it may get some results, but it doesn't have a strong direction. Because it's just the desire of the living entity. What they desire today, that's the direction they go. The other has great knowledge, but knowledge, unless it's applied, what is the use? So this becomes a problem for this. So the two have to be combined. This is a very important point, is that if we have the philosophy without the the culture, then we don't get anything. We get speculation. And if we have the culture without the philosophy, we'll end up with sentiment. So this combination is very important. And we see in our life, if we don't combine the two, then the results are not very good. We don't get good results. We don't get a proper situation. So here we see the results are nicely combined. The sannyasi knows the importance of, he has a desire to obtain a goal. He's not just knowledge for knowledge's sake. He wants to actually come to a conclusion. He wants to know something. And, you know, he's searching after something higher and higher. And then he's seen this when the Vaishnava came, and that he was experiencing a bliss beyond what he was experiencing in this Brahmananda. So you got a taste for that. Then we see that he knows how to behave, that he goes to the spiritual master and offers his obeisances. He knows how to behave. And he is not, you know, he's feeling shy when the spiritual master is offering obeisances in return. And then we see that he is, And then the spiritual master there is offering obeisances because he is very humble and he is not feeling that he is the spiritual master, and he is always referring to his spiritual master. So this is the proper etiquette. So we see this etiquette is being followed by these personalities. So we see the advancement is also very quick. Some will describe that this Jiva Dharma, the advancement that's going on here, is accomplished over many, many, many lifetimes. But for the novel's sake and for our understanding, it's condensed into one lifetime. So if one can follow these principles and take them seriously, then the speed is attainable. And if one doesn't, then it may take many lifetimes to obtain. Point is, as you follow it in this way, you understand it in the way, practice it in this way, then the result comes very quickly, and because it's the natural position of the soul. And if one doesn't, it just takes that much longer. That's all. So both are there. So both aspects are important, that one does not become proud, so he understands that he is not so advanced, so it takes time. At the same time is that faith and hope is there, that enthusiasm, that the whole process can work very quickly. So that balances. Then we see that they are meeting Prajumna Brahmachari, and he is requesting that they once study from, that the sannyasi study from the Babaji, Paramahamsa Babaji, and that, you know, he study these teachings of Jagannanda Pandit, Spanish Bharta, and hearing like this. So then, in this way, the sannyasi is then living for some time with the Babaji. He becomes fixed in his devotional activities. We notice that he's practicing, he's chanting, he becomes fixed. He takes up the Vaishnava qualities. With this, then he is then becomes qualified to start to understand the transcendental process. And in here, then we see that he is able to also, the spiritual master is understanding his position, and the disciple is also, then it is revealed to him his position in their service to the Supreme Lord. So those aspects are there. But we see after that, still all the different things to understand are there. It's not that one has some understanding of his relationship with Krishna, and without clearing out whatever anartas are there, one only absorbs himself in this knowledge or this activity. Because otherwise it won't be pure, it will not be properly situated. It means the getting out of the material world or never forgetting Krishna is part, and always remembering Krishna, or attracting oneself to the spiritual world. These have to be done side by side. Otherwise, it says that there's only one rule, right? And that one rule is always remember Krishna, never forget. So if you count, it's two. But these are counted as one. Because you cannot always remember Krishna if you're forgetting him. And to never forget Krishna means you have to remember him. So we'll only forget Krishna if we're attracted to the material world. Otherwise, something so attractive as Krishna, why we wouldn't remember? Because we have these side attractions to the material world. And so, but at the same time is, we get rid of the attractions to the material world. If we're not attracted to Krishna, then we also not have Krishna. We won't remember Krishna. You won't forget, but you won't remember either. So this is the Brahman, this is the liberated platform. So the sannyasi was developed in this way. So, but he has doubts because he doesn't know how to go beyond liberation. He's attracted by it, but still he is having to remove these particular attractions or doubts within his mind. So therefore now they'll begin the process of study. And we'll see from now on then this first part then establish the story, establish the place and the different personalities involved. But we see it very much establish the culture. This culture is very, very important. Some will say it's not so important. Some will say, well, it's Indian culture. But what does that mean? You know, Prabhupada gave the example. What is it? This Bengali saying. Mora hati, lak taka. Means a dead elephant. Dead or alive, an elephant's worth a lakh of rupees. When it's alive, you can sell it, because it's alive, you'll get a lakh of rupees. But when it dies, then you still get a lakh of rupees. But not for the live elephant, but for the tusks and bones and everything, because all the bone, everything's ivory. So the whole framework of it is valuable. So even though it may be dead, you know, it's just whatever you see now, it's still worth it, because you can still learn from it, gain from it, like that. So this idea was Indian culture, but what is India? What is that? We call it India. Westerners call it India. The name is Bharatvarsha. Bharatvarsha is mentioned in the scriptures. And the culture that is followed here is the culture that the whole world should follow. So that means, what is the culture? Not what the Indians have lost due to the Western influences. And due to the Western influences, therefore, they don't follow the culture. So what we call today Indian culture, which we say is not like the Vedic culture, is actually Indians trying to be Western. So then the glory does not come to the Western. You can't say, well, therefore, since Indian culture is just Indian, I'll follow the Western. Right? This doesn't work, because the reason we call the Vedic culture has become Indian culture is because of the influence of the Western. So if just some influence of it has ruined it, what if you take this ruining thing in its pure form? What will be the result? Right? If you have some nectar and you put a little bit of poison, and you'll say, oh, this is no good because it's poison. Then the logical idea is therefore I won't take this, I'll just take this straight poison. And I will get a good result. If I take this nectar that has some poison in it, I'll get a bad result. So therefore I will take the pure poison and I will get a wonderful result. So it's not a logical statement. So the idea is that it's not Indian culture. That may be where you have to distinguish between what is not properly practiced of the Vedic culture. What is, but that's there anywhere. You go to the West, and you can find all kinds of criminals and bad mentality. So we say that's Western culture. No, we'll say Western culture is, you know, proper morals and understandings and, you know, good standard of pranamoy, so, you know, the streets are clean and everything's in order and everybody's doing everything properly. So you'll say that's Western culture, but you can go all over the West and find so many examples, unlimited examples, that don't follow that. So do we say that's Western? No. So the same in India. It has to be applied. We have to be very careful that we don't use these things just to get out of following the Vedic culture, because it means having to restrain ourselves, having to direct ourselves, having to retrain ourselves. And that our training, our upbringing, our view on things may not be the best view. So this is important to understand. So these things are possible today. They can be followed exactly as they're being discussed here, because these are eternal principles. You know, yesterday fire was hot, it burns. 100 years ago, fire was hot, it burned. 500 years ago, 5,000, a million years, it was always hot, it burned. So that is the nature of something, the actual dharma of something. So the culture is always valuable. One has to use one's intelligence to apply it. Because the culture is more than the external, the ritual. That's the thing. The sannyasi was very expert at all the rituals. He had studied all the scriptures. But he understood there was something more, something deeper. Therefore, then he came to this conclusion. So now they will start to discuss what is the actual understanding of religion, how to follow it, what is the proper. Otherwise, then one has a tendency to go one of two ways. Take the rule, and without understanding it, follow it very strictly, very fanatically, or throw out the rule, because it says it doesn't mean anything, doesn't apply today. So that is... Any questions on this? The sannyasi said, "O Master, for many days I've heard about religion. I have asked many people about the truth of religion. Sad to say, their answers were not in harmony with each other. Therefore, I ask, what is the true duty of the individual soul? Why do different teachers give different explanations of the truth of religion? If there is only one truth, why do the philosophers not agree in their opinions? Meditating on the feet of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, the saintly Babaji replied, O fortunate one, as far as my understanding allows, I will tell you the truth of religion. Please listen." Here's another point, is that as far as one understands, that is what is explained. One should never think that I understand everything, because Krishna is unlimited, so there's no chance of understanding everything. So as far as he understands, then he says, this is what I know, I will teach you that. More than this, then we don't know, we can't teach. And fortunate, because the disciple is also seen as fortunate, because they have this interest, they have this desire to know, and they have come to, you know, associate with devotees, follow the culture, follow the philosophy. So they're very fortunate. So then both are very pleased in each other's association, because both feel that they are getting, you know, association of those who are fortunate. A fortunate one, as far as my understanding allows, I will tell you the truth of religion. Please listen. The eternal nature of a thing is its eternal religion. The religion of something comes from its original identity. When Lord Krishna desires to create something, he creates its original nature. That original nature is its eternal religion. However, when a thing comes into contact with other things, its nature may become changed. After some days, that changed state becomes firmly established, and it seems to be the eternal nature of the thing. However, this changed nature is not in truth the real nature of the thing. These changed natures are called nisarga. I will give you an example of such a changed nature. Water has an original nature. The original nature of water is that it is liquid. However, in contact with certain circumstances, that nature becomes changed in the form of liquid water, may become solid ice. That is the changed nature of water, which seems to be its original nature. However, this changed nature is not eternal. It is always temporary. It is manifested for some reason. It remains for some time, and eventually it disappears of its own accord. On the other hand, the original nature of a thing is eternal. Even when the changed nature is manifested, the original nature remains, although it is dormant. In the course of time, when circumstances are favorable, the original nature is again openly manifested. The original nature of a thing is eternal. Its changed nature is temporary. One who knows the truth knows the difference between the eternal and the temporary nature. One who does not know the truth thinks the temporary nature is eternal. So we have to be able to distinguish between these two situations. You know, just like you have a child, the natural nature is, you know, they'll be, you know, behave in their natural childish way. They'll have relationships and affection with their parents, and, you know, they do things that the children do. Now, if the circumstances are not favorable for this, there's some change in this, then it may change their nature. They may, you know, have to become, you know, take up responsibilities too early, or they may become distrustful of others, or so many things may happen due to this change. So we may take that as that's the natural nature, because that's what we see. But this is not the actual thing. It may remain if the situation remains like that. But again, if you put it back to its natural position, then the natural nature will come back again. Now, it may take time. Like you have a block of ice, you put it in a warm place, then it will again go liquid, the water. But it won't happen immediately. It will take some time. It'll slowly, slowly, slowly go. So therefore, we have to be able to see this difference. This is a very important thing. The modern culture then takes it, they see today, that is the actual eternal nature. So the living entity in this material world then is bewildered by two illusions, that everything is eternal and everything is full of happiness. So then in the position that they see today, whatever it is, whatever they take, whatever, they will take that this is the way it always is. Therefore, then they will make up their philosophies, their ideas, their values based on this. And this is what gives the difference between the Vedic and the modern. Because the Vedic deals with the essence of the Vedic deals with the eternal nature of something. Temporary aspects of the Vedic will deal with the pious changed nature of the object. And generally then the contemporary cultures, then they will deal with the impious nature, changed nature of the object. So then we have to be able to distinguish between these if we want to be able to actually make a study of what's eternal and what is temporary. If we want to actually see nature, then we have to see this.
Change nature is that which appears to be there. I kind of understand that.
Change nature would mean when an object, though it has a natural nature, comes in contact with another object that has an effect on it that changes it, like that. You know, just like water has a nature, but when it comes in contact with the situation that's cold, it changes. So therefore, it appears that that's like that. Like if you go to Antarctica, you know, then that's the way it is. It's just like that. But we see, you know, the ice is falling off, it's going somewhere, it's melting. So it's not the eternal nature, though it may be for a long time. So, in other words, the point is this, the living entity is conditioned. They have an original nature, a servant of Krishna. but in contact with the material energy, they've been changed. And so that seems to be the eternal nature. You know, the enjoying spirit, the controlling spirit, all these different things. So, but that's not the real nature. The nature is something else, like that. So that, therefore, see, in other words, the question has been asked, why do different people talk about religion in different ways? And because they're looking at different aspects of the conditioned nature, right? Or just they're looking at a portion of the transcendental, of the original nature, just that the soul is eternal. So only the Vaishnavas can actually understand religion, because they understand all of the different aspects. They understand the actual eternal nature of the soul. So therefore, you'll find, it seems like there's so many religions. There's no, there's only one religion. But it's just a matter of what you are describing of that one religion. You know, what aspect you're talking about. So if you see the whole picture, that's the matured Vaishnava tradition. And if you see part of it, then it will be either an immature vision or a vision by that's affected by the conditioned nature. So according to desire, you will see a different part of it. You're attracted by a different aspect of it. And then that's all. You know, so that's all you know. You know, like that. So,
yes.
Any other questions on this? Just on what the difference between the eternal and the temporary nature of things. Yes.
How do you see someone's conditioned nature? Because they get, say, fully purified. In one sense, that conditioning comes out as the conditioned nature, but it's a fully purified state. What gets left behind and what carries on? Not looking at their eternal spiritual identity, but in terms of their material conditioning. In that lifetime, they're practicing Sanjavati, getting fully purified. What's that manifestation then? That's just the purified condition nature. How do we see that? An eternal...
Could you give an example?
Somebody comes with a particular kind of set of conditioning into the material world, and by the process of sadhana bhakti, by the end of that lifetime, they will have given up the unwanted aspects of that condition nature, but still it's manifest in a particular way that's different from someone else. It's got its individuality. But it's purified, not looking at the eternal swarup, but as it's manifest in the material, external sense. What is that?
Well, the reason it's all individual is because every individual is different. So even their approach to the material world is going to be, you know, different. Say their particular identities and desires was going to be different, you know, minutely unique. So that's because each individual soul is different. So therefore you have that aspect. Then in purifying, then as long as one is basically embodied, then until what's called vastu siddhi, then Krishna doesn't remove all of the prarabdha karma. Because if he does, then there's no body or, you know, mind or intelligence to work with, right? Because that is a result of one's previous activities. Therefore, it has to remain. So one will just see it in its purified condition. Because when you engage it in Krishna's service, then it is transcendental. So that it has to remain. Because if it completely goes away, then they'll because until you've attained your spiritual form and it is complete, then there's always going to be some tinge of materiality there. If you're 90% spiritual, still that means 10% is material. Like that, as we see the gopis, when they were, those that did not get the association with the Siddha gopis, they, even though they had a spiritual form, they're in Vrindavan, they've taken birth in Vrindavan, and they're part of the spiritual pastimes, transcendental pastimes, still there was some touch of materiality there. And it was then burned up when in their separation from Krishna, when they couldn't go to Krishna. Right? Then, in that, then it becomes completely spiritualized. Right? So then, so it's a transformation. So that was given up. So then, therefore, it said that they left their bodies or gave up their bodies. But they gave up that material aspect of it. But the spiritual remained. So they didn't die. Some will say they died. They didn't die. They just, what was material of their form, you know, and the consciousness went. That was given up. But the spiritual aspect, then that remained. You know, and that became what was then the manifest. So these things are going on at once. It's very important to be able to understand two things that seem to be contradictory happening at the same time, same place, you know, in the same situation. Because then one can understand, you know, our philosophy and understand the pastimes like that. Otherwise, it's much more difficult like that. So the form will have to be there. Like that. But it's there. And it will be being purified as one goes along. Like that. So that's not the problem. One should see what's the good parts. Then one will always maintain enthused. If one will find something, some fault or some material aspect, you know, if it's not a necessity, then it will simply be a disturbance. But if one sees the other side, then it's good. Does that make sense?